Babylon Podcast was our last best hope for B5 fans. A self-contained show, 1 hour long, located on an RSS feed. A place for interviews and episode discussions for a whole bunch of humans and aliens. A shining beacon in cyberspace, all alone on the web. It was the dawn of the third age of podcasting, the year the Lost Tales came upon us all. This is the podcast about the story of the last of the Babylon stations. The year is 2007. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
And welcome back to another Babylon Podcast. I am Summer Brooks.
I'm Tim Callender.
Yeah, and it's Jeffrey O. Willers calling on a happy St. Patkosh Day. I'm here in lovely downtown Los Angeles.
Yes, and all of us sound like our signals being routed from Mars through Io around Proxima 3 back to Babylon 5.
Yeah. We don't have the gold channel clearance at this point.
Nope. We were very much in need of Garibaldi's signal hacking skills.
That's how we got Cinemax.
Well, today is going to be a rather interesting, actually a fun episode, because we've gotten so far behind on our voicemail that this is going to be all voicemail all the time.
It's like a group hug, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm sure there'll be plenty of Vorlon jokes interspersed in there. But other than that, are you planning on drinking any green beer this weekend?
I never drink green beer. I'm sorry. I just think that's an unnatural thing.
I don't think the color of the beer really matters.
Oh yeah?
It's just about the volume. It's not about the color.
Well, I guess, frankly, the alcohol per volume.
Quantity that matters.
Which reminds me, just a little promo here. Charlie the Beer Guy, available at Farpoint Media. Tune in, check it out. You'll love it. Great programming.
Yes.
Contributing to the lesser decline of everyone's livers. By giving them higher quality beer.
Right, I was going to say he contributes to the general sense of well-being to everyone's lives. I would have given it a more positive spin.
Yes.
It's mental health improvement, you know, your physical health, that's another thing entirely different. Hey, if you're feeling good, what does it matter, right?
Yeah, that's what I say.
You say that now, but what will you say after three green beers?
I said, Pack, and I gotta go potty.
Now, Jeffrey, you've had green beer, I take it, yes?
Oh, yeah, in Chicago.
Okay, now let me ask, well, that's a good place to get it, I suppose. Now, it goes in green. Does it come out green?
Oh. I don't remember that part of it.
Oh, boy.
Okay, well, I'm sure we're going to get voicemail feedback on that.
Yeah, you totally took us to our lowest level instantly there. Thanks.
Well, you know, if Garibaldi's got the zipped and fastened, I might as well have the green beer in, green beer out question. You want to talk socks?
I have an update, Summer.
Yes?
And the update is there is no update. After repeated phone calls to our good friends at Warner Brothers Home Video to have some assistance in going through the proper channels to talk to the cast and crew of The Lost Tales, alas, we still have no return phone calls or response to email.
That's disheartening.
So just letting everybody know that we are not missing the ball. We are just trying to do it the right way. Well, you know, of course I could call cast and crew friends and get them to talk about this, but that's not appropriate. That's not the way you should do it. You know, it should go through the proper channels. And if they're blowing us off intentionally, then I call for anarchy. But if they're just busy or they're not interested in promoting Lost Tales, then, you know, at least get back to us and say, thanks, no thanks. But so there you go. I'm throwing the gauntlet down. Come on, Warner Brothers, talk to us.
Could it be that they're waiting to receive a finished product to start packaging and promoting it then?
Well, you know, the thing is, I'll say this. There is starting to get to be a fair number of information sources out on the web about this. And we've gotten from some very diligent listeners some links, and I'll get those posted up here in the next couple of days. But these are clearly, I mean, they don't look like necessarily just fan guys who have been scouring the net or making furtive phone calls. This looks fairly official. I mean, one of them is for a website that's dedicated to CG work, and it's about the CG that's done for Lost Tales. And, you know, they're talking with Merles, I believe the man's name is, who did the storyboard and some of the renderings and whatnot for Lost Tales. So that, I mean, that doesn't seem like just somebody patches stuff together. So, you know, it's rather official looking. So there, I'm just adding to the general consternation. How's that?
But it's still, none of that reeks of the official WB stamp, and that would be something that I would like to be able to offer the listeners of this podcast is, you know, the real deal. And,
yeah.
However, if they don't want to play nice with us, then we'll just continue to go through our guerrilla tactics of, you know, we'll just find people and get them to say as much as they can say without getting in trouble.
Okay. So how long do we wait before we declare anarchy?
Do we have a release date yet?
End of July.
Originally it was October, and then it was moved up to July.
That's what I was thinking. So, I mean, in July, we're quickly approaching April. April, May, I mean, I think you'd want to get some hype out there. Anyway, to answer your question, Tim, I am always a sucker for anarchy, so let's just get it on.
Okay.
Chaos is my name.
Why do I get the feeling he just wants chaos so he can sneak into the bars and drink for free?
Hey, Summer, do you know what Irish diplomacy is?
No.
It is the ability to tell a man to go to hell so he looks forward to the trip.
Oh, I love it.
Well, what do you say, guys? Let's get started with these voicemails. Take a break and then roll into it.
Okay.
The Scapecast has started its second season, and after winning the highest honor a fan podcast can receive, the Parsec Award, what did the crew of the Scapecast do?
Kevin and Lindy on codeine, so watch out.
Well, apparently, they went insane.
Attention.
Don't bother, they're here.
Stop.
It's a new one for me.
Howdy, howdy.
Ah, fellas.
Hey, Ema, what you doing?
Sword fighting.
Woohoo.
Crack.
Cuckoo.
Daft. Demented.
How
deranged.
Long can that woman talk?
But then again, look what their show's about.
So much to say.
What the frill are you?
It's sweeter than a sweet thing.
I've got a plan.
You make me drink beef.
Women.
I want to be blonde again.
She wants to watch.
Oh, no.
Girl power.
And yet, such little capacity.
Bite me.
Wile E. Coyote would come up with a better plan than that.
Sex, she gives me a Woody.
Would you quit speaking English?
The Scapecast is your guide to the wonders of Farscape. You can find the Scapecast at scapecast.org.
This is a show that never ends, never ends, and it goes on and on, my friend.
And we are back with more Babylon Podcast. We are all about the voicemail today.
Yes. we got quite a bit of voicemail, and it kind of got stacked up a little bit. And we just made the decision that it would be, rather than try to go through them a little bit at a time and really get a backlog, let's just wipe it all out. So those of you who are looking forward to deep geeking, we will continue with the deep geeking next week. Although I imagine we'll get a little bit of deep geeking in on some of these voicemails. So.
Oh, yeah.
You can never avoid deep geeking.
No. Not with Tim. I gotta imagine that Tim wakes up in the morning. He goes, "Eggs. Now eggs. Let's see. Eggs were first seen in the episode, but possibly that the opportunity for the egg to have come from the other side created the darkness. But the yellow. Okay, Tim. I'm sorry.
Usually it's bagel, but that's okay too.
Oh.
No one expects the Vorlon Inquisition.
Our chief weapon is obfuscation. Obfuscation, the surprise. Amongst our weapons are such diverse elements as... Oh, sorry, go ahead. I'll come in again.
Let's play the first voicemail.
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
Hello, my name is Elias. I'm in Portland, Maine. I'm calling in response to episode number 56. I just wanted to add a little comment onto Tim's linking infection with All Alone in the Night. There is actually a real-world connection between those episodes. Marshall Teague, he plays Nelson, the assistant, who later becomes the war machine in Infection, and he also plays Narn, also known as Talon, in later episodes. In All Alone in the Night, which is when we first see him. So Marshall Teague is the connection that your subconscious was desperately trying to make by discussing those two episodes together. I just thought I'd add that little tidbit of interesting info. Thanks very much for the podcast. It's wonderful. Have a good day.
Thanks, Elias. You are quite correct.
That's excellent. Marshall Teague is one of the coolest guys. He is... What a great personality, what a great presence. I mean, when he walked in the room, you know he's in the room. I've had the pleasure of being to his house. I mean, he is such a great guy. I like Marshall Teague a lot. So anytime we can say Marshall Teague, we should.
Well, we should say that Jeffrey Willer should get in touch with Marshall Teague to have him on the Babylon podcast.
That's a good call. You're right. You're absolutely right. I should.
Hey, let me ask you a question about that. I believe we touched on this with our interview with John Vulich last year, but is, I mean, obviously you don't hire an actor if he's not capable of doing the part, but if you have a choice between...
No, look at me.
Look, Jeffrey, nobody can glide like you can with 90 pounds of fiberglass on your shoulders.
They didn't hire me for my glide, believe me. Go on.
Another geek train came on the tracks at that point. No, you have two actors, all right? All things being equal, if you've already had someone like Marshall Teague who has sat down for prosthetics, does that tip the decision toward a Marshall Teague?
You know, those decisions are some of the hardest decisions you make within any production. In fact, I've got a project that I'm doing right now, and secondary casting was held today, and a decision was made about one of the actors. And the guy who didn't get picked was just as good, and he had so much to offer. And the guy who we did pick didn't have as much to offer, but the director felt that if he really worked with him, he might be able, you know, to make something happen that would be... that would pay off. So you kind of, you know, like there was the safe bet and the risky bet. Well, that's, I tell you that story because that, in a way, is the way to answer your question is, what are you trying to get out of that character, and what does that director really want to bring to the character's voice? And yes, of course, the stupid, you know, hours of prosthetic makeup plays into it. Absolutely, because you know that's such a shoe-in when you've got a great actor that can that can do anything like a Marshall Teak and is perfectly comfortable no matter how much crap you glue to his face, as opposed to some who have not gone through that experience, and the experience of having crap glued to your face would perhaps intimidate or hold you back from feeling comfortable and taking full possession of the role that you were going to deliver. So, yes, it does, but ultimately it's really just this highly subjective decision that a director has to make.
Gotcha. Thank you for your candor and insight.
Candor?
Yeah.
Insight?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Babcom Link established. Beginning transmission.
Hi, Tim, Summer, Jeffrey, Mike, Brian, and who else, anyone else joining the podcast lately. This is Gary from Jacksonville. I still don't have any background music like some of the more high-tech people that we have leaving voicemail nowadays, but I'm going to contribute nonetheless. I was watching television the other night, and I was flipping through, and all of a sudden, before I know it, there is Bruce Boxleitner, Captain Sheridan, right in front of my eyes. He was on the show Cold Case, and he was playing someone who had knocked up a girl back when he was a teenager, and he was implicated in their death. He did a great job, and it just made me look forward all the more to The Lost Tale coming out. July seems awfully far away right now. Have a good day, guys. Bye.
Yeah, I had actually heard that he was going to be guest starring, and unfortunately I heard after the episode had already aired.
And I am not one for procedural crime dramas, so I had no clue. I feel bad now. I guess I'm going to have to try to catch it when it comes back on reruns just to see Bruce do his thing.
I think that, you know, to this earlier question about directors making their choice, I would think that Bruce knocking people up wasn't a stretch. I'm sorry. Bruce would laugh with me. I know he would.
Do you know something that you shouldn't?
Next.
See, I'm confused about this Gary asking about fancy bed music. Is he talking about this fancy bed music?
Babcom Link established. Beginning transmission.
Home, home on B5. With an Arn and the Centaur replay. Where shelter meets herb. A discouraging word.
Malarkey! Malarkey!
Keep this up, Shikar. And soon you won't have a planet to protect.
Bastard. Fanatic.
Murderer.
We should have wiped out your kind when we had the chance.
What happened? Run out of small children to butcher?
You pig! Bastard! Now you can go to hell!
And you can kiss my pouch!
I just want you to know, as the gatekeeper for the Babcast Gmail account, when that one came down the pike, I didn't even know what to make of that. Frankly,
yeah,
I mean, you know, it's a good expression of the love that Londo and Jakar had for each other. I think that's evident in those clips. But,
sounded like an episode of I Love Lucy to me.
Jakar, you got some splaining to do.
Well, no, Londo, why can't I be in your band?
Oh. Okay.
Very funny.
Next one.
Babcom Link established. Beginning transmission.
This is Gary from Jacksonville. I'm calling to comment on show 57's voicemail. Summer was mentioning about Mongoose Publishing. over at JMSnews.com. JMS goes at length to explain that while he wasn't thrilled with the way Mongoose Publishing was doing Babylon 5, particularly the books, he offered to help them go over, I guess, book outlines as well as story ideas, and he said he didn't want any royalties at all from them. He just wanted them to do it right, yet they were still unable to actually take him up on this offer. As a result, as far as JMS is concerned, any book that Mongoose Publishing puts out is just speculative fiction as far as the Babylon 5 universe is concerned. Have a good day, guys. Bye.
I've been meaning to follow up on that because last I had read on the JMS mailing list thing is quite a different story in that Mongoose, from what I've read, from the Great Maker's own posts, is that Mongoose wanted JMS to be involved in writing outlines or stories or whatever, and when he wrote back and said, that's fine, how much are you going to pay me? He was met with a long, long silence, in a manner of speaking, and then they came back with a sum that, you know, objectively speaking, in the gaming world was probably fairly big, but for someone like J. Michael Straczynski, who's working in Hollywood and comics and all the rest, was laughable. And they could never come to terms, and was, you know, apparently Mongoose went ahead and used some material that he had provided without his permission, and at that point, you know, his feelings was he's never going to work with them. Anything they do, he considers to be fan fiction, and that's the end of it. So I'm going to have to follow up on what Gary's talking about because, like I said, that just doesn't ring true with what I've read.
Hmm.
So understanding is a three-edged sword. So
there you go. Exactly right. As a parenthetical note, while you were saying that, I looked up on his site there real quick, and it was someone was asking, the most recent post was someone asking if there would be any books or comics coming out in conjunction with the B5 Lost Tales, and he said there were no plans as such, although there may be a mini comic included in the DVD, but that was still at a yes or no stage.
Ooh, yeah. That could be interesting.
That would be kind of neat.
Babcom Link established. Beginning transmission.
Hi guys, it's Edmund from Greenville. I'll try to curb the esoteric verbiage this time. I know it's distracting when Mike keeps grabbing his thesaurus. I just have a simple comment on All Alone in the Night. During your discussion of the Grey Council scene, it occurred to me for the first time that the shift on the Council runs both ways. Not only is the warrior caste becoming dominant with 4 members, but the religious caste is reduced to the weakest group with just 2. I'd always concentrated on the warriors gaining ascendancy without realizing they're also reducing the power and influence of the religious. Perhaps everyone realized this, but it was new to me. Also, your observations about the scene being played solely between Narun and Delenn got me thinking. While it certainly works to establish their ongoing antagonism, I also wondered if JMS was deftly addressing both the dramatic and budgetary needs of the series. As the son of 2 working actors, I'm aware of SAG rules and pay scales stating that actors are paid more if they speak and if their character is named in the script. Thankfully, my parents always had names and lines, but having a number of silent, anonymous Grey Council members in those scenes certainly saves some shekels. Perhaps Jeffrey could comment on how much of a factor such considerations were in shaping the episodes.
Well... Let's see. Only JMS can really answer that question, okay? But those were always considerations. He is a super pro at not only telling the story, but telling the story in a way that makes production plausible. It wasn't like he wrote these wonderful epics and then handed them to us and we said, can't afford that. Can't afford that. No, can't quite squit, you know, get that into the schedule. No, you know. So I believe that between his first draft and the draft that we actually worked on, that we actually filmed, things were dangerously spot on. So I'm sure that he took those things into consideration, and I'm sure there was a fair amount of dialogue that probably took place between himself and John Copeland on, you know, if Joe had an idea, he would, I know for a fact that he would come to John and say, do you think we could? And John would say one way or the other of whether that could happen. So let's just say that Joe was a very well-informed writer, because the scripts that did come out were, they were great scripts that could also be produced.
There we go.
Well, I always considered the Grey Council to be something of, from what we had seen historically, there wasn't a whole lot of chatter going on amongst the Grey Council, except for the scenes where Ducat was there. He was actually conversing with them, telling them stuff. So we never saw the argumentative, you know, everybody's talking at the same time kind of thing that we saw in the council chambers on B5, or that we heard, probably could imagine what was going on in EarthGov, or even amongst the nobles in the Centauri court. They were more prone to listen, and as we find out later, take too long to consider their options before acting.
Yeah, you know, and I would also argue, a copy of the novelization of In the Beginning showed up on my doorstep, and I'm not quite sure where it came from. It just sort of mysteriously appeared. So I've been just kind of skimming through that and picking and you know, reading things. And Edmund's comment and something that you've just said, Summer, makes me think that part of the problem with the Grey Council at the time of the events that we see in Babylon 5 is that where all the decision-making and so forth goes on is outside of the chambers. In other words, we see a number of scenes where we have clandestine meetings between members. Like you remember, I think it's Hedren gives Delenn the triluminary.
Mm-hmm.
And that's outside the chambers. And he's basically saying, well, you know what, we're on a dangerous path. I'm not sure what we can do, but here, take this. And she's like, well, what are you giving this to me for? And he goes, nobody's going to miss it, and if you're right, you'll need it. In the beginning, there are a number of scenes, well, you know, between Lenon and Ducat, and Delenn and those conversations about what to do and what's happening with the Anlashak and everything else. And these are Grey Council members, or people who are at least have the influence of the Grey Council. So the debate and the policy, it's almost like it's the actual meeting becomes you know, almost a ritual as opposed to any actual decision making processes going on. And as you note, you know, they take too long to come to a decision. That might be part of it, is everybody's backbiting and having their own little secret agendas, but they're not dealing with it in the venue in which they should, which would be the Grey Council. And ultimately, it's broken, as Delenn shows in Severed Dreams. So, anyways.
Interesting.
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
Hello, this is Rob from Arlington, Texas, calling about Babylon podcast number 56. At time index 43 minutes 04, you, Summer made the mention that Kos might not have known about Lorien at that point in season 2. But I say, no, Kos absolutely knows about Lorien. First of all, the shadows know about Lorien. That's why they go back to Zahadum every time they're driven off. And even Lorien told Sheridan that Kos almost certainly knew that he was there, which is why Kos told Sheridan to jump. Also, as far as why Lorien would be looking for him, Lorien himself says that he's been waiting on Zahadum for someone to talk to, and that Sheridan is the first one to make it that far. The presumption is that Lorien is attempting to contact the younger races sidestepping the bickering Vorlons and Shadows to try and actually say, you know, they've kind of lost their way as far as being your shepherd. Maybe I can try and talk to you directly. Anyway, it seems absolutely clear that Kosh knew about Lorien. Plus, given the fact that both the Vorlons and Shadows regard Lorien as a mythical, near godlike figure, which is why in the space of a 10-minute conversation, they were willing to abandon their war, in fact, even abandon their homeworld and leave the galaxy forever. Anyway, my 2 cents. Bye.
Hmm.
43 minutes and 8 seconds in, huh?
So, Lorien is the equivalent of the wise man on the mountain. He was just waiting for somebody to survive the climb up to the mountain to talk to him.
Or the fall into the pit. Yeah. Well, if I recall correctly, it's been a little while since I've seen those, like a falling toward apotheosis. Lorien comments to Sheridan that the Shadows built this place around him and, you know, to, in honor of him, but they have forgotten about him or what he stands for.
Yeah.
So that makes sense. I mean, you know, it gets back to the vision. You know, JMS's comment is that the man in between is looking for you refers to Lorien. Now, the other thing is that in the Technomage trilogy, it is made fairly apparent that the Vorlons, or at least Kosh, knows that Lorien is there. And certainly, as it's written in this book, which is canon, of course, Kosh, in leaving a piece of himself inside Sheridan, does so half out of desperation, hoping that he will be able to be there to guide Sheridan when the time comes to make that jump. So... Go ahead, Jeffrey. You were going to try.
I was just going to say, you know, listening to him, I think I much agreed that that Kosh certainly knew that Lorien was present, was there. I don't make it quite such a, you know, deity up on the mountain kind of thing. I always put it much more in a perspective. I interpret it more as a perspective of a extended family or a parental kind of situation, a little bit closer. They of course knew they were there, and I'm not sure that Lorien was trying to sidestep bickering Vorlons and Shadows, that it was more a case of like a parent turns a deaf ear to, you know, squabbling kids or something like that. You know, it wasn't all quite that dramatic or epic. It's much more I don't know, maybe that's just because what I can identify with, but maybe it's a little more just, you know, parental in all of it, you know. And
it's funny you say that, Jeffrey, because...
I'm having a little bit of a problem imagining Lorien sitting on the lounge going, don't make me come in there.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are we there yet? Are we there yet?
Although it's interesting you say that, Jeffrey, because I remember the first time I saw... I think it's Into the Fire where the whole thing comes to a head. That was exactly my impression when the Vorlons and the Shadows are talking, and Lorien says to him, "Okay, it's time for the younger races. We need to step aside." And their responses to him were very much like that, like children, you know, saying, "We're stepping into the unknown." You know, the response to the Shadows, "Will you be going with us?" And Lorien's response is very, very paternal and very loving. He said, "Of course I will. You know, you don't have anything to be afraid of."
Right.
And, and that was, I thought that was a very, very interesting way to play that, to how that whole piece of the arc played out. It was not expected.
There's a distance in understanding, and yet there's this underlying respect that everybody understands how the system works. Call me crazy, but when I was a kid, there was a public pool in my town that we could all go to, and there was time when the kids could be in, and there was a time when the lifeguard would blow the whistle and we all had
swim
to get out so the adults could go in. Exactly right. So, you know, that's how I see the whole thing.
And you were one of the kids, Jeffrey, what, sitting with one foot in the water waiting for the whistle to blow so you can get back in?
No, not really, because I liked watching the older women. They looked better than the little girls.
Oh,
nothing,
one, Mike.
Nothing gets away here on the Babylon Podcast.
Babcom Link established. Beginning transmission.
Hi guys, it's Edmund from Greenville. Last week I was listening to the Mirror for Lawn podcast from the Supernova Expo in Australia you posted on the website. Having just watched Acts of Sacrifice, I had a wonderful moment of synchronicity. Mira talked about how JMS questioned her about her experiences in Yugoslavia during the breakup and conflict for use in the series. Obviously, much of this research wound up in the Centauri-Narn conflict, and especially in this episode. The debates about how or if to intervene, Sheridan's rebuke about being able to trace back the causes 100 years, all reflect the war in the Balkans, and many others before and since. Of course, unfortunately here, we tend to count the grievances by centuries or even millennia. I had read about JMS use of Mira's experiences, but hearing it direct from her gave it extra resonance. I sincerely hope the Vorlon is able to use his influence over the Minbari to spirit her onto the show sometime. As this clip indicates, I think Mike would especially enjoy her appearance.
And then he said, but I don't know if I'll have time, because it's going tick-tock, tick-tock, tick-tock all the time.
Oh. Thanks for that.
That was good. Very nice.
Yes, I understand that there were many times when Mira would read scripts and would be amazed at how JMS had managed to capture the essence of some of the things she had gone through, with all the issues in the Yugoslavia and so forth. Powerful stuff.
And we have, in fact, asked Mira to be on our podcast, and respectfully, she's not all that interested in coming on and just talking about Babylon, in its entirety. So we'll try.
What else does she want to talk about? We're open.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So the question I'd like to ask her, this is just... I think about this. Here you have a beautiful woman. She's a well-respected actress in her home country of Yugoslavia. It starts breaking apart violently. So she leaves the country. She comes to America. She heads to Hollywood, which is, you know, a difficult place to break into. I mean, even if you have credentials, I'm sure it's hard to get a role. And the first major role she gets is on this wacky science sci-fi show. She gets cast as an alien, and in the pilot, the whole deal with it is that you're not even sure she's a woman. I mean, she had to sit there at some point looking at this and going, what am I getting myself into?
No, if you ask her, she thinks this is the greatest country. That was the best thing that happened. The more distance she put between herself and Milosevic was a good thing.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, well. Summer, you have anything to add on that?
No.
Okay.
I'm not creeping.
Blah, 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 Tim, blah, blah, blah.
Babcom Link established. Beginning transmission.
Hi, guys, it's Chris from New Zealand here. When Tim asked how I felt about Zima, my first reaction was, what? Zima's a real thing? No way. Apart from seeing it on B5, I'd never heard of it. So I just assumed it was a word JMS had made up for the show. After all, Zima does sound a bit like science fiction. So I had a look on the internet to find out what the Zima thing is all about, and dude, that just sounds hideous. Ugh. So how do I feel about Zima? No thanks. See ya.
Zima, the drink that would not die.
That brings up an interesting question. Was Zima distributed outside of the U.S. at the time?
Don't know.
I don't know.
Because, I mean, that I never knew that. It was like, I have no idea. I thought JMS made that up. No. That was a real hideous a hideous beverage concoction that people tried to get us to drink. Wow.
Well, you know, I mean, for us here in the States, it's sometimes hard to realize that everything we're able to get here isn't exported all around the world, despite what we'd like to think, I suppose.
Or beyond the rim.
Probably a good thing.
Or beyond the rim. Thank you. Now, there's Jeffrey getting his geek on. Thank you.
Babcom Link established. Beginning transmission.
This is Tajan of the Narn Regime. It has come to our attention that the Babylon podcast, a production supposedly recorded in neutral territory, has been co-opted by a covert agent of the Centauri Republic. I speak, of course, of the one called Yarsto. Doubt it if you will, but clearly, Yarsto displays all the characteristics of a Centauri. One need only listen to that accent. And can't you hear the sound of his political wives now culling in the distance? Yarsto! Most importantly, the Narn regime cannot help but notice the recent campaign of aggressive Centauri expansion into all corners of Farpoint Media. On behalf of the Narn regime and the League of Non-Aligned Listeners, I must protest this war of aggression and demand equal time. Of course, it is entirely possible that Yarsto is, in fact, a human from the Netherlands. If so, the non-regime will concede on one condition. Tickets to Amsterdam for ourselves and representatives of Farpoint Media. For a week-long peace summit. We'll bring the Jaconeth plants. Except, don't bring that Evo Terra. I swear, he's a Pac-Mara. This has been Tajan of the non-regime.
Okay, this is my favorite voicemail ever.
I love our fan. Oh my goodness.
That was
well. I have two things to say to Dijon. If he wants equal time, he simply needs to send in more voicemails like Yarsto does. Otherwise, he can go to his quarters, stick his fingers in his ears, and hum real loud till it's over.
Evo Terra is a Pac-Mara.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm not even touching.
Oh, that is so going in the next show.
Not going there. Okay, next one.
Babcom Link established. Beginning transmission.
Hey, this is Martin in England. You may not know that over here in the 90s, Babylon 5 was shown on Channel 4, and towards the end of the season, Channel 4 would get the last few episodes before the US did. And as a result, JMS occasionally would put a little nod in when there was someone on the Babcom. They'd have the crew minion say, "Captain Sheridan, message coming in from Ivanova. She's on Channel 4," just as a little in-joke.
I did not know that.
I did not know that either.
I don't remember that.
Well, that's because you've had too many green beers.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised, but okay.
Now I'm going to have to go look for that, too.
But I definitely knew that it was on Channel 4.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, that was...
And we know that Babylon 5 was well-received in the UK, so...
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Bloody Yanks.
This is kind of fun. I like this show. We got to do this every now and then. We just got to pack up all the voicemails.
That's what we need to do, yeah.
This is a crack up. This is great.
Any more, Mike?
Oh, yeah.
Babcom Link to Earth Force Destroyer Netherlands established. Incoming message from Captain Yarsto.
The Babylon podcast was our last best hope for a pan-free zone. It failed. But in the year of the livestream broadcast, it became something greater. Our last best hope for Buki. The year is 2007. The name of the show is the Babylon Podcast.
So the question is, how many fans will revolt if we actually use that for the open next year?
I'm one of them.
We just have to get Summer to read it, that's all.
I'm not putting the Buki in the open. No way.
Wait a minute. That was what? That's a poll quote there. Where is it?
I'm not putting the bouquet in the open. Yeah.
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
Hi guys, it's Edmund from Greenville. I wanted to defend Tim's listening to B5 on cassette. Back in the 70s, before videotape, my friends and I used to tape shows on cassette. Mainly the classic early years of Saturday Night Live, but Python, Trek, UFO as well. All of them held up as audio programs. If you've seen the show, hearing it brings it all back in your mind's eye. And most of those eye candy space battle scenes are backed with music, so in B5's case, you get a nice Franky interlude with psh 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 thrown in. By the way, I loved Carrie Dobro driving her director nuts by going psh 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 every time she shot her ray gun. I also had a Walkman with the TV band and was amazed at how many shows worked as radio. Basically, if you have good writing, the words and score alone will hold up. So give Tim a break. He's not alone in his craziness. Of course, yeah. With my family history, I probably don't represent the typical media consumer. I tape TV on cassette. My dad schedules recordings of his favorite radio shows on his VCR. Growing up before remotes were widespread, he always rigged a mute switch on our TV to kill the commercials. But then again, is anyone who listens to and records the live feed typical? Be seeing you.
He's my new hero. He does a great job. I like
him. And he's there in my corner. At least you and I share the same sort of lunacy, and that makes me feel warm and fuzzy.
Well, comedy is different. I could see listening to Monty Python or some of the old British shows because they had a turn for the ear. I just never dawned on me to record a TV show as audio and listen to it. I've listened to it in the background, like if there's something on that I want to watch, I can listen to it in the next room while I'm working on the computer, and then when a cool scene comes up, I can like, kind of scoot in and watch it again. But I guess I'm more visual than I am auditory.
Well, and the recording radio on VCR, yeah, I came up with that a long time ago, too.
I know a lot of people who did that.
Yeah, I did that too. Because you actually had a timer and you could record the audio side. So,
right.
I know people who would actually record those long overnight, like 3 or 4 hours, where there was no commercials, mm-hmm. and then use them later for parties.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's what I say. I was going to give you another assignment, but you still haven't come up with your top five and bottom five episodes yet. So, add this into your assignment book. Here's a good one. Comes the Inquisitor is a good one to do the audio. I'm serious. Go ahead and record it onto some sort of media, audio only, and listen to it.
Or I
if for no other reason, what's that?
My eyes. I said I could put the DVD in and close my eyes.
You could do that, except you'd be too tempted to open them. So you're going to have Robin tie a thing around. Get a life, Willard. My God. You try it.
I'm just saying that if she turned on the show and closed her eyes, she would just fall asleep.
Oh, she's asleep. I'm with you now.
I'm not making fun of
you. No,
you
can't.
I never make fun of you, Tim.
Never, ever.
You're my B5 guru.
Babcom link established. Beginning transmission.
Okay, Curtin St. George again. About the dream sequence in All Alone in the Night, I don't have any interpretations to give you, but the first thing that I thought of when I saw the show was the dream sequence in Twin Peaks, the David Lynch TV series of a few years before Babylon 5. In that show, Kyle MacLachlan played an FBI agent who was stranger than Fox Mulder in The X-Files, and he had this bizarre dream sequence that I can recall with a dancing dwarf, making cryptic statements to him, and a girl who was dead who was whispering secrets in his ear. Also, he could find out who murdered Laura Palmer. That was the plot of that show. And I thought perhaps JMS was either doing a little David Lynch tribute, or he didn't like that dream sequence. He wanted to do something that wasn't quite so cryptic. And if I wanted to go further, if I wanted to get 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon on you, I would point out that Kyle MacLachlan, of course, who also is probably best remembered for being in Dune, well, at least by sci-fi fans, he starred in a movie called The Hidden, a sci-fi film, which also starred Claudia Christian. She played a stripper who had an alien inside of her. And also in that movie was Richard Boehmer, who was a regular player on Twin Peaks. And he was in one episode of Babylon 5. He played the captain of the Cortez. And when I checked his credits, I also found he did a number of episodes of Murder, She Wrote, which, as we all know, JMS was involved in. Now, all of this, of course, means, well, absolutely nothing, really. And also the dream sequence may have nothing to do with David Lynch. I mean, dream sequences have been around since, I guess, film noirs in the 1940s, maybe even earlier. So I guess your guess is as good as mine.
Well, first of all, I have to say thanks for bringing up Twin Peaks, because I loved that show. And the little man from another place wasn't whispering cryptic statements. He was speaking backwards, so there you go. But I do have to make one correction. It's not Richard Boehmer who played the captain of the Cortez. It was Russ Tamblyn, who was also on Twin Peaks, played Dr. Jacoby. Russ, Richard Boehmer played Horn, Ben Horn.
I forgot that Russ Tamblyn was in Twin Peaks.
Yes. Dr. Jacoby had the glasses, one red and one blue lens.
It's scary you know that.
I'm a big David Lynch fan. I can't wait for England Empire to get to Richmond. I'm looking forward to seeing that one.
And Claudia had an alien in her?
Yeah, Claudia Christian was one of the people taken over by the alien entity.
Well, there you go.
She wreaked some havoc in her time.
We so need a link for that movie to buy off of Babylon 5 website.
I could do that.
Okay, kids, you're all done.
No way.
Yeah, that's
way.
It.
Way? Wow. But Tim, tick-tock, tick-tock. How did we do on time, Mike?
You guys got 10 minutes to kill, so
jabber on.
Well, we could just really throw you for a loop and sign off now. Wouldn't that be it?
End it early?
Yeah. Just for you, Mike. Just for you.
Yeah, you could you could use a little break for editing this week. So.
Okay. I'm all good for that.
Okay, wait. What about if this is all about viewer feedback? Summer, what are they saying in the chat room? We'll address some of their questions there.
I don't know.
She's not on her computer.
Sitting on the floor in the living room.
Hang on. The Draco Vista studio will pick up the slack. We can tell you. Tim is manning the chat room.
Getting ready to log in right now.
No, it's up
other
there.
Tim.
Oh, the other Tim.
The other Tim.
I'm Tim Shady. Yes, I'm the real Shady. Oh, you other Tim Shady is just imitating.
Should be up already.
Yeah, it's up.
Well, in the interlude, I will make a recommendation, as we've discussed off and on in the past about the space program. I checked out from the library a great DVD called For All Mankind. I highly recommend it. It is about the Apollo program. And what makes it novel is that, as it says on the cover, shot entirely on location by the NASA astronauts. There's no narration except for voiceovers provided by the Apollo astronauts. And it doesn't go in depth into any one particular mission. It's just kind of a general overview, if you will, of what the lunar missions were about. But the footage is stunning, and the commentary by the astronauts is revelatory, and I highly recommend it to anyone.
Okay, we got the report from the chat room, and it is nothing.
We put them all to sleep, huh?
It's a whole bunch of chit-chat, and that's about it.
Wow.
Well, there you go.
My.
We're getting good at this, huh?
There's a couple lines about drinking Bravari, though.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Although that causes heart attack.
What was Bravari?
It's an Irish tradition.
Well, now we can get into an absinthe conversation. I do like my absinthe.
nut.
Yeah, I would like it, but I'm never there for it.
Oh. How funny. Yeah. Okay, well, you guys are done then.
All right.
We're done.
Okay, then.
Well, you know what? We're going to make this episode short because it's daylight savings time and that changed and somehow...
Daylight war on time?
Yeah, exactly. In metric time, that means we can do a shorter show. And it'll be longer in Hawaii or something. I don't know.
All the music, Mike.
Oh, my.
And if you want to leave your own emails, you can send it to BabylonPodcast@gmail.com or leave us your own creative interpretation of our deep geeking, and who knows, you may become a new star just like Yarsto and our friend Tajan. That number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
You hear the great work here, Putasol.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the gate.